40 Olympic greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
For me to be able to have the opportunity to carry the flag for the United States into opening ceremonies, I mean, it's a dream come true. You know, to lead our country into this Olympics is something that I honestly never thought I would have the opportunity to do. And when one of our staff members told me last night that I was selected, I think I had the biggest smile on my face you could possibly find. I was pretty much like a little bit of emotion came over me. I probably shed a little bit of tears, just of joy, just the honor and the opportunity to do that it's incredible.
That's American swimmer Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian in history, talking about the incredible experience of being the flag bearer for Team USA at Friday night's opening ceremony for the 2016 Rio Games. The 31-year-old Phelps has won an incredible 22 Olympic medals, including 18 gold. Michael says it's also been an incredible experience to see top athletes in the Olympic Village in Rio, including the world's top-ranked men's tennis player.
I passed Djokovic walking down the street in the middle of the village, and I was like, oh, I want a picture. So, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of just the cool part of being able to be in the village and seeing athletes from all over the world, but also at all levels. You know, obviously Djokovic, for me, there are a lot of athletes who I am kind of in awe of and you know, pretty amazed by, and you know, he's definitely one of them.
Meanwhile, other athletes in the Olympic Village are amazed by and in awe of Michael Phelps. James Guy is the world 200 meters freestyle swimming champion from Britain.
I think Phelps is the greatest Olympian of all time, and I remember I was walking past him today, actually, and people asking him for photos, and I thought, that's Michael Phelps, man. And I remember watching him when I was 8 or 9 years old at Athens, and he was dominant in everything. He was just this guy who no one could beat, and how things have changed, how he's still going and is still kind of the greatest athlete ever. Racing him is something pretty special.
British swimming champion James Guy talking about Michael Phelps. Andy Murray, who won the Olympic tennis title at Wimbledon 4 years ago, will carry Team Great Britain's Union Jack at Friday's opening ceremony in Rio de Janeiro.
Last night was amazing. I was just getting into bed at about 11:15. I was in my pants. And our team leader came and said, the chef de mission needs to speak to you. And, you know, I basically jumped out of bed, ran downstairs, and yeah, Mark obviously gave me the news, and I was speechless, really. I didn't know what to say. I was kind of just repeating myself, I think, a lot. I was saying how honored I was and humbled, and, you know, I'd be extremely proud to do it. So thank you very much for the honor of getting to do that.
Defending Olympic tennis champion Andy Murray speaking in Rio. The Olympic women's football tournament kicked off Wednesday in Brazil. Let's take a quick look at the scores. The USA began its quest for a fourth consecutive gold medal with a 2-0 victory over New Zealand. The American women are trying to become the first team in history to win the World Cup and then the Olympics in back-to-back years. Elsewhere, France scored a 4-0 win over Colombia. Sweden edged South Africa 1-0. Olympic host Brazil got off to a good start with a 3-0 victory over China. Canada defeated Australia 2-0, and Germany was a big 6-1 winner over Zimbabwe. In more Olympic news, the United States is bidding for its third consecutive gold medal in men's basketball in Rio. Sean Ford, he's the USA men's national team director. Sunnyside Sports reporter Ben Cento reached Sean in Las Vegas before the American squad traveled to Brazil. And Ben asked Sean, what's the team's focus like ahead of Saturday night's opening game against China?
We look at it as a great opportunity for the players to play a competition that's followed by the entire world and followed very closely by our country. They take representing their country very seriously. They take the opportunity to compete at a high level and compete with great players against great players. I think when you're an elite athlete, you know, there's nothing more you can ask for than to try to be at the highest level of competition. So I think that they look forward to that. Historically, the NBA players, they compete during the NBA very hard, but they get along real well and they really like each other and they enjoy spending time with each other. There's a sense of team bonding that goes on. So I think they're excited about maybe the level of play that this team can get to, knowing that winning a gold medal for these guys and winning a championship is really important. You know, you play sports. These guys have played basketball for their entire lives. And the amount of basketball you play when you're an elite NBA player starting in high school, in the scheme of things, there's very few opportunities to win championships. So we're seeing this as an opportunity to win a championship. And this particular championship comes with a gold medal.
What are the chances for Team USA getting the gold in Rio?
One thing that we never want to do is think that anything's a given in life or in basketball. We know that we have a talented team, and we know that the United States has typically been the strongest team in basketball. We want to win, and we're going to do everything we can to bring home the gold medal.
What is the process like for selecting the players for Team USA? I'm sure it's pretty competitive.
You know, it is competitive, and to be honest with you, what we've learned over the years is that we need a large pool of players that are ready to play, that are in our culture, and that we can work with when we have to make our final selections, because NBA players were their second team that they belong to. And, I know that we've come a long way in building our culture, but still, their primary focus is their NBA team. And in addition to that, the health of their body, where they are in their career, where they are in their contract status, where they are with their family, kids, and building a family and raising a family. So we know that when it comes to a commitment like USA Basketball in the summer, there's a lot of things that players have to consider, and we understand that. So we typically, about 3 years out from the Olympics, start our national team pool of players and start kind of working together with mini camps and things like that. And we announced a group of 31 Olympic finalists in January. And so that was kind of our list of players that we felt comfortable with selecting the Olympic team from. I know there's been a lot written about, some players that had decided not to play for various reasons, and that they were unavailable. But we felt because the pool was strong enough, even though it got a lot of attention that people weren't playing, we still are very, very happy with our team. And it goes to show you the depth of great players in the NBA and the fact that we still have 9 players that are all-stars on our team. And one of the 3 that wasn't an all-star was first-team NBA. So I think sometimes you can lose sight of we're focusing on the players that we have and we're really, really excited about it. That's kind of how it goes in terms of putting it together.
With players having their NBA team being their first priority and not going to the Olympics for whatever reason, I know LeBron James withdrew his name, Steph Curry. Does that hurt the team?
We really like our chances. Now, who wouldn't want the best players in the world? Like, we all know that their NBA players are great, and there's certain players that are really great, and Steph and LeBron are in that category, and between the two of them, I believe they've won the last 5 MVP awards, or at least the last 4. So yeah, we would want them, but we certainly understand where they are in their careers and taking care of their bodies, and we would love them to play, but certainly understand the reasons why they're not playing. But at the same time, we still feel we have elite players on our team, and we're focused on those players right now, and we're happy with them. And, you know, in terms of our chances of winning, you know, we look at it that our job is to get a collection of great NBA players and to try to play at the highest level of basketball that we can. And any combination of 12 can get us to a high level of basketball. And then, you know, depending upon the level of our opponents, we feel that we'll have a good chance.
Can you talk a little bit about your personal role with USA Basketball and what it is that you do?
My title is the men's national team director. I'm kind of the full-time person that focuses on this team every day. Even the coaching staff, the medical staff, the players actually all belong to another team, and then we're their second team. For me, this is my only team. So I focus on this all the time, and I'm constantly in touch with Jerry Colangelo and Coach K as we plan not only for the structure of the team, but if we plan for the model of the training camp to prepare the team, the logistics for the team in terms of training camp, air travel, ground transportation, all that type of stuff. That's what I spend a lot of time on so that things are pretty smooth when a team gets together. And I think that I also try to stay in contact with and connected with the players and their agents just so that they're fully informed of what's going on. And as they're preparing to be on the team and preparing to make their decisions based on other things that are going on in their lives, I spend a lot of time on the operations of the team and how it's going to work when we're together.
What team are you most looking forward to playing? Who looks like the toughest opponent?
You can only look at it on paper at this point. We know that Spain is a very, very good team, and we have a lot of respect for them. We also know that they're gunning for us. This is my sixth Olympics, but I know that three previous Olympics, Spain has lost four games. They lost one in 04, two in 08, and one in 12. And all four of those losses were to us. This is another run they're going to make, and I respect that. I mean, they're really good. Australia will be good. Serbia will be very good. France will be very good. You know, Lithuania's, no country has been more consistent in their level of competition and winning medals. You know, we've done well, but Lithuania's done great over the years. They always find a way to have a good team at the end. So I think the moment that we don't respect our opponent is the moment that we're incredibly vulnerable. Countries, no matter the level, they take a lot of pride in playing in the Olympic Games, and they take a lot of pride in the opportunity to beat us. So we expect great games.
Can you comment on head coach Mike Krzyzewski and what he's accomplished during his time with USA Basketball? I understand he's stepping down.
He's been great. It's amazing to think that he's been doing this for 10 years. He and Jerry Colangelo together have made a huge impact on USA Basketball and international basketball, and I think basketball in the United States overall. He's shown great leadership, the consistency, and the commitment. I think that you can't underestimate the commitment that he's made. He runs his Duke program and coaches the national team. That's a heck of a commitment. And we're constantly in communication with him and always on the same page. You know, as it looked to, okay, well, coach's going to do it one more time, he kind of thought, you know what, this is going to be the last one. And we kind of knew that. And so it wasn't necessarily an abrupt step down as it was, okay, as I, you know, re-up, you know, for my third tour of duty, if you will, this will be it. So we kind of knew that going in, and that's why we felt it was important to have a succession plan. That's when we started thinking about it just over a year ago, that we should think about who the next coach would be and get him in place. And there's no reason to look any farther than Greg Popovich. He was very interested in it, and perfect situation for both USA Basketball and Pop. That's why we were able to name Pop in October as our next national team coach, so there's a little bit of an overlap. And he's coaching the select team with young NBA players that we hope will have an opportunity to be on the 2020 Olympic team.
Coach Greg Popovich, you know, when he coaches the Spurs, as well as Coach K when he's coaching Duke University, they're kind of the stern, not so flashy type of coaches. Is there a reason why USA goes for that kind of coach versus a more flamboyant, boisterous coach?
You know, I don't know if that part of it was actually high on the checklist of like what we actually want. I think that you need coaches that are respected by the players that they will coach. People that respect and are humbled by the opportunity to represent their country. And I think one of the qualities that it's a coincidence, but they both went to military academies here in the United States. They love their country, and it means a lot to them. They served their country, if you will, at a higher level than most by, you know, their commitment to the military and commitment to their country. And they've then gone on and been great basketball coaches. But, you know, we represent the United States when we're playing, when we put USA in our chest. And they're both extraordinary coaches. They are respected by other coaches. They're respected around the world, and they're respected by the players that they coach. That's an important quality.
That's Sean Ford, USA Basketball's national team director. And Sean spoke from Las Vegas with Sunny Side of Sports reporter Ben Cento. Tadi Abeje, who celebrated his 23rd birthday on Wednesday, has this celebratory Olympic fun fact for us about handball. The sport was introduced at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, but dropped after that, only to be picked up again at the 1972 Olympics, again on German soil, Munich. Handball has teams of seven players, and Rio 2016 will feature both men's and women's tournaments. France is bidding for its third consecutive Olympic title in the men's competition, while Norway is also aiming for its third straight Olympic championship in the women's tournament. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog. The address is blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. My latest blog post is titled USA Olympic Hurdler Sydney McLaughlin. Sydney will celebrate her 17th birthday on Sunday. She's going to be the youngest American track and field athlete to compete in the Olympics since 1976. My friend in Nigeria, Shagun Dot on the Spot Adeyemi, read my blog post and says, kudos to Sydney, who obviously is pushing forth a family tradition. Sonny, you were right on the money when you wrote, even if she doesn't win a medal at the Olympics, the young hurdler looks ready to wave the American flag high at future international competitions. And Shagun closes by saying, best of luck to Sydney in Rio. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty Olympic greetings, Andrew.
Sporty Olympic greetings, Sonny. We're in the home stretch now.
Home stretch? I'm guessing Rio 2016 is trending?
Absolutely, and it's all about getting to the Olympics. Now, when we talk about getting to the Olympics, we talk about things like the competition, the training, the qualification. We don't usually talk about things like baggage being missing and airport delays and getting stuck. But that's the issue. It's not just getting to Rio as an athlete. It's actually physically getting to Rio to participate as an athlete in the Olympics. And so we start with the Nigerian football team who got stuck in Atlanta, Georgia, on their way to the Olympics, apparently because of a funding issue with the sports ministry. Couldn't fund their plane, or the funds didn't go through. It's not clear what exactly happened, but they got stuck in Atlanta, which is kind of, as many people have pointed out on social media, kind of funny because 20 years ago at the 1996 Olympics, Nigeria won the gold medal in men's football. So here they are 20 years later, and they're stuck in Atlanta, Georgia, at the airport trying to make their way down to Brazil for their first match. And under the wire, their first match is later this evening against Japan. And they finally made it, but only after the first planes that were provided for them that somebody paid for, they actually rejected them. They said they were too small. They wouldn't have enough space for the flight down. So Delta Airlines apparently was able to get them free of charge a plane that the National Basketball Association charters and uses for their players. Now, if that plane didn't have enough leg room, I don't know what they would want, because if they can fit basketball players who are 6'8", 6'9", 6'10" on that plane, certainly it'd be good enough for the Nigerian football team. But they're off on their way now, finally. But just a bizarre sports story, and one that's attracted a lot of comments on social media. People saying that, pointing the blame, pointing fingers, saying who's to blame, whether it's the sports ministry or the government, or the Nigerian Football Federation, just calling it a snafu, saying it's all been, just a big mess. and saying it doesn't bode well for the team that they have to play now after they've been dealing with all of this. How can they really focus on trying to compete and winning matches when they've been dealing with all these travel troubles?
Big mess indeed, Andrew. I think you can safely say it's another case of poor preparation by the Nigerians.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are talking about on social media. They're saying that the government's to blame, the Football Federation. They said, you know, it's not like you didn't have 4 years to plan. It's not like it wasn't on the calendar that you couldn't have figured that out. But yeah, it's a lot of blame game. And I'm sure that in the coming days, we're going to hear maybe more about that and who's responsible. But I think for the Nigerian football team, I think their hope is that they can do so well in Rio that they maybe take off the attention from this travel mix-up and put it back on their sport and their athletic abilities in Brazil.
Well, we wish the Nigerian boys well in Rio, but I think it has to affect their performance, Andrew.
Yeah, I think, you know, athletes start arriving, you know, a week, even a couple weeks in advance just so they can get acclimated and they can adjust to time differences and things like that. So the fact that not only are they maybe not adjusted as well, they've been spending their time in an airport. And not only that, but they get off the plane, and then just a few hours after they land, they have to take to the pitch and start playing. So not even have a day of rest. You know, they barely have a few hours. So we'll watch when they take on Japan later today. We'll see if it does affect their performance.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Andrew, what else is trending on this Thursday?
Well, the Nigerian football team aren't the only Olympians that got stuck at the airport. There's some other Olympians, specifically tennis players, that have kind of not just got stuck, but kind of have gone all over the world in an attempt to get to Rio. Of course, this past week, we had the Rogers Cup in Toronto and Montreal, one of the lead-ups to the U.S. Open later this month and part of the U.S. Open series. And you had a lot of the female players were playing in Montreal, so you had a lot of them trying to get from Montreal down to Rio. Now, I don't know that there are any direct flights down there, and if there are, they're probably all booked. So you had cases like Agnieszka Radwanska, who is number three or four woman in the world, Polish tennis player, who's had to fly from Montreal to New York to Lisbon, Portugal, to Rio. So she actually had to fly to Europe across the Atlantic and then back across the Atlantic to Rio because those are the only flights available to her that she could get.
Not exactly a direct flight.
No, no. That's maybe the Portuguese flight, at least. They'll be speaking Portuguese on the flight from Lisbon to Rio, that's for sure. But no, we see a lot of other players. Elena Vesnina, saying that their flight got delayed. I guess their connecting flight got delayed, so they were going to miss their connection to Rio. So I believe she got stuck in the airport along with Daria Gavrilova, who she was traveling with. And then you have Sara Errani and Roberta Vinci, are two of the Italian players, and they've been documenting their travels on social media, getting stuck all over the place. At one point, it looks like they ended up possibly in Japan. There's some pictures, some kind of geisha women dressed up behind them. I think it's probably just a picture at the airport, but it had a lot of fans wondering, did they end up in Japan? Did they have to go to Japan to go to Rio? But to add insult to injury, they finally did make it to Rio, and their bags got lost. They've tweeted out, and they said to United Airlines, they said, could you please get us our bags at least now that we finally made it to Rio? So even when you do make it there and deal with all the travel trials and tribulations, there's still the issue of getting your baggage, and that's still a problem that you can face on the ground. So hopefully they get their bags. I know that the tennis, I believe, kicks off this weekend, so hopefully they didn't pack all their rackets and everything in the checked bags. Maybe they have one in their carry-on that they can use.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. And we'll see you again on Friday, Andrew.
Sounds good. A big day tomorrow for sure.
Opening day, official opening day of the Olympics. And that wraps up the August 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Last year was the hottest year on record. This is partly due to an exceptionally strong El Niño and partly because of global warming resulting from human activity. El Niño departed in early June, but the heat continues, and the resulting drought has left nearly 100 million people around the globe facing a bleak and hungry future. Some of the hardest hit regions are in southern Africa. Around 18 million people there are expected to suffer crisis food insecurity, meaning a crisis has resulted in hunger and diminished nutrition. This and other impacts on livestock, water access, and treatment for those living with HIV will last well into 2017. This drought is having a devastating impact on the southern Africa region, and we know things could get even worse, said Rebecca Sutton of Oxfam, an international confederation of charitable organizations that work toward ending global poverty. People are struggling now. They have watched their crops wither and their animals starve to death. Even in the best-case scenario, the next major harvest is not expected until early next year. The Southern Africa Development Community has launched an emergency appeal for $2.4 billion to help those most severely hit by the drought and protect development gains. The Regional Interagency Standing Committee has released an action plan targeted at the seven most affected countries: Angola, Lesotho, Madagascar, Malawi, Mozambique, Swaziland, and Zimbabwe, which requires $1.2 billion in funding. In response, the United States announced an additional $127 million to this effort, bringing the total the United States has provided to the region to over $300 million in humanitarian aid. This includes emergency food assistance, nutrition and health support, access to safe drinking water, and seeds. The funding will be delivered through the United Nations and our NGO partners. Based on early warning and careful tracking of the progression of El Niño, the United States mobilized an integrated response earlier this year to ensure El Niño's impacts do not negate progress we've already made in reducing hunger and poverty. We have also adjusted development investments to lessen the drought's impact, speed recovery, and to help build resilience in southern Africa. The United States applauds the many fellow donors who have contributed to the Southern Africa drought response and encourages others to join this international effort. Mobilizing a robust and coordinated global response will be critical to protect the region's gains against chronic hunger and poverty and to ensure early recovery.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. Two-Face.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.